everyone. Welcome to Let's Talk About It with Dora Sherry. Get ready for some lively discussion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Let's Talk About It with your host, Dora Sherry. Tonight, we're going to talk about radio. My guest joining me is Kevin Fodor. You may not recognize his name or his face, but unless you've been living under a rock somewhere, you will recognize Mr. Jason Michaels, the voice of WHIO Radio for decades. He has given us the blessing tonight of allowing me to interview him, and let me introduce him to you now. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing, Dora?
I am wonderful, thank you. How are you?
Oh, not bad at all. Sitting here in my office in my palatial estate.
there you go.
With one of my cats sitting right next to me, so it's a wonderful night.
Aw, which kitty is sitting next to you?
Yeah, it's Midnight.
Midnight. I met
in fact,
Midnight.
You want to make your...
Oh,
there you go. You're on television, Midnight.
Hi, Midnight. Yeah. You're beautiful.
Or at least on a podcast.
Yeah, you're beautiful too, thing. Kevin. And I want to thank you, everyone, tonight. Kevin is not only a legendary radio voice, he is also a teacher. And he's been very patient helping me tonight, along with Victoria Smith from Term Radio, learn my first podcast. Kevin, you're my very first guest on Let's Talk About It.
I mean, somebody's got to be first. It might as well be me.
That's right. Can you tell us a little bit about Kevin Fodor and how you, what you were like as a child and how you got to become Jason Michaels?
hopelessly bitten by the radio bug. And it happened in 1964. And the person I could probably blame for it is my cousin, Suzanne. Like all young girls were in 1964, Suzanne was Beatle crazy.
Oh,
and I'd been spending some time over at their house as they were preparing a float for a parade here in town, the Kettering Holiday at Home Parade. And Suzanne decided to introduce me to the notion of a radio station request line. And and basically, I started thinking, she said, we're going to call the radio station. I'm going to ask them to play a song and they'll play it for us and say our names on the radio. So, you know, she did, the radio station did. And at that point, kind of a light went off over the top of my head. Wait a minute. You mean this guy sits in a room, plays records, and gets paid for it?
Yeah.
And I couldn't think of anything that might be better to do with my life than that. And I've been doing it now. Well, you know, now I'm actually into year 52. So it's been a wonderful career, actually.
Been a very long career, very successful career. In fact, weren't you just inducted into the Dayton Radio Hall of Fame?
Dayton Broadcasters Hall of Fame class of 2022.
There you go. Hold it up there, Kevin. You earned it.
Right. And it was quite a night. In case anybody wants to look it up, I'm an hour and 10 minutes into the YouTube video of it, that you can find that out.
So we can find you on YouTube under
in a couple of places, actually.
Yeah,
one of my air checks from WING Radio is on a channel. If you type in Jason Roberts WING, it'll come up on YouTube.
A lot of AKAs for you.
Oh, I've had more names than I've had common sense.
Well, it's better to have names than be called names, right, Kevin?
Yeah, yeah.
You also were the first teacher I met at the International College of Broadcasting in Dayton, Ohio.
That is
my
correct.
Very first night, you showed up, and
I was teaching there for 12 years.
Yeah, great.
I rewrote the curriculum three times.
Yeah,
and and they were wonderful people.
Oh my gosh, yes, what a blessing it was. I had no intentions of going there, and was invited by Randy Oliver, who was a student there, and asked me to help him with an assignment he had. He needed to interview someone. So the next thing you know, I leave there co-hosting People Helping People with Randy and enrolled at ICB. Lo and behold, I had no idea I was preparing for this, Kevin.
Well, but you see, the whole industry is now in a state of flux. And, you know, radio still rules the car audio. But now people are moving into podcasting, which is something that I plan on doing eventually. But to talk about, I think, the history of some of the radio stations, you know, everybody hears about WABC and WLS and KHJ, CKLW.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize that, for example, WING was first on the air experimentally in 1921, 6 months before Pal Crossley fired up WLW.
Wow. 1921?
Yep.
That's incredible.
And WHIO came on the air in 1935. WONE, I think, sometime in the 40s. And WABI, I think, finally came on the air in 52. So,
wow.
And I worked at one time or another for all of them.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. Yeah, I did some research on you. I looked you up, Kevin. Boy, you should see that stuff. But you were also friends with some legend. Not only are you a legend yourself, let me say, you have been in the company of some, like Gene by Golly Berry.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep. Selwyn Atchison was his real name.
Really?
And he went to work at WING in 1947 to do a jazz show called Swing with Wing. And then this one crazy thing happened in 1955 when Bill Haley and the Comets released Rock Around the Clock, and Elvis came along and rock and roll began. And but Gene was always interested in, you know, R&B and jazz. It was his thing. But so when the doo-wop groups of the 1950s came along and the 60s, and especially in 64 when Motown, and 61 when Motown came into play, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles released Shop Around, and the Supremes came along. Well, now suddenly here was all of this music that was recorded by Black artists exploding all over the radio. And that's, I think, when Gene really found his home in rock and roll.
Yeah. That's interesting, because this is Black History Month, too, this month. Yeah.
Well, and of course, Dayton, Ohio. Oh, there's Mitty.
There you go.
You had to photobomb me, didn't you?
That's right.
Calm down, bud. But anyway, so the, you know, later in years, after Gene first left WING in 1963, he convinced H.K. Bud Kroll, who was the owner of WABI and WDAO, which Mr. Kroll had just gotten a construction permit for, this big 50,000 watt FM, and convinced him to play R&B music on it. And that station became WDAO. They called it Big Dayo, 1077, 50,000 watts, sounding like a million.
Wow.
And it was, I think, arguably the first FM soul station in America.
Wow. That's amazing. You also were friends with Steve Kerr?
Oh, yeah. I met Steve Kirk in 1967. He had been at Wing maybe 6-7 months at that point. I was sitting in the office watching him on the air from the lobby, and he saw me, and he eventually came out of the studio with a box in his hand. He walks up to me and he says, "Here, kid, have a donut." And really wonderful man, booked the Beatles twice and lost money on it.
No. How do you lose money on the Beatles?
Yes. But, what happened really was they had done the concert in 66 at Crosley Field in Cincinnati. Steve at the time was working at WSAI. And it was going to be a big outdoor concert, Cincinnati's version of Shea Stadium. And unfortunately, it decided to storm.
Oh, great.
One of those late summer thunderstorms came up, drenched the stage. The Beatles managers were going nuts backstage, violated our contract and all that. And so finally, in the middle of all this brouhaha, John Lennon spoke up and said, "Well, wait a minute, where are we playing tomorrow?" And they said, St. Louis, John. And he said, "Well, how long does it take for us to fly from Cincinnati to St. Louis?" "About 2 hours." He goes, "Well, that's it." And then he pointed at Steve, said, "You go out there and you tell everybody to come back with their ticket stubs tomorrow at noon, and we'll let them everybody come back in, and then we'll play the show, then we'll fly on to St. Louis." Problem solved. Unfortunately, the added cost of security for protecting the Beatles is what blew the budget.
Oh, I can only imagine.
I kidded Steve mercilessly that you're the only guy I know who could book the Beatles and lose money on it.
That's funny. He was a
God bless him. The man lived to almost make it to his 92nd birthday. And it was odd because about, I want to say maybe a couple of months before he passed away, I was thinking to myself, Steve's getting up in years, and we're going to lose him someday. And it's probably going to be you that has to break the news.
Oh,
darn, it didn't happen. I was kind of devastated. I mean, and I remember saying to the audience, "Ladies and gentlemen, you'll excuse me if I get a little emotional here." And I said, "A legendary Dayton radio voice has been stilled. Steve Kirkpatrick," that was his real name, otherwise known as Steve Kirk, died peacefully in his sleep just a couple of days shy of his 92nd birthday.
Wow.
And, big loss to me. Kirky was loud. He was brash. Funny. He did something called put-ons.
Called what?
Put-ons.
Oh, put-ons.
What they were was they would call somebody and come, be recording the call. And I'll give you an example of one of his put-ons. He had called a lady who was the mother and manager of a teenage rock band. And basically had said, he heard all about the band, heard they're real good, and said, "We're going to have a party, and I want your band to play at the party." And, oh, great. Yeah, we'd love to do it for you. He said, there's just one catch. My wife, all of our friends, we're nudists. So they wanted the band to play in the nude.
No.
And the woman's reaction, over my dead body. And here he is trying to convince this woman to let the band play. But that was, you know, if you think of the real personalities of this area, this region, Steve was doing in 1967 and 68 what Gary Burbank did for 27 years at WLW. The difference was most of Gary's characters were coming out of his head.
Yeah.
But still, it was the same type of thing.
Yeah. Everybody thinks radio is glamorous. Can you tell me what a day is like in the studio? Do you just get there and just do your thing and leave? It's a lot of work, isn't it? Preparing and
right. Honestly, the preparation, you know, is incredible if you're really trying to do it right.
Yeah.
You're coming up with situations. You're coming up with characters. For me, when I was at Wing and I would be filling in for Steve, I didn't want to do the same show that he did.
Yeah.
I wanted to be able to do my show or my kind of thing. So with the help of our production director, a guy by the name of Jim Blommel, this was 1986. The Reds manager was auto dealer Marge Schott.
Oh, my gosh. I met her.
So, you know, Jim would come up with this, good morning, Jason, this is Marge. And Marge would be constantly calling me on the station trying to sell me a car.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, in this case, Marge was trying to sell me Pete Rose's fire engine Cincinnati Red Corvette, just driven by a little old baseball manager to get it back and forth from the courthouse, you know. So I mean, it, you know, and Marge says to me, Jason, have you got my number? And I said, Marge, I've had your number for a long time. But that's the kind of thing, you know, to make it fun, to make people laugh. And to some degree, that's what radio's gotten away from it. And now they're seeing it in people beginning to switch to other mediums.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
what would you say was one of the hardest things you ever had to announce? One of your hardest days on radio?
Yeah, I mean, you know, almost nobody gets 50 plus years in this business. Somebody's always getting rid of you and, you know, canceling your contract, firing you. You go from city to city. Basically, I worked in Wilmington, Ohio, Dayton, Cincinnati, back to Dayton or Xenia, over to Richmond, Indiana, back to Dayton at WING and hot rockin' flame throwing Z93. And then from there, they shot me to Columbus at WCOL, and I worked both oldies and country radio there. Then I had a rather unique opportunity. I wanted to be a program director really bad, but I didn't have the level of experience on my resume to allow that to happen. So I was basically told by one of the greatest people I ever worked for, a guy by the name of Dave Robbins. Dave Robbins was our general manager. Dave had been a night slammer on B96, hot hits in Chicago, later came back to manage the station when he worked for CBS. But Dave told me, he said, all you got to do, find somebody who will let you have the chair. make it work for a couple of years, and you're set. So a former manager of mine, a guy by the name of Bill Cusack, said, hey, I hear you're looking to maybe be a PD. I'm like, well, yeah. He says, come on over and talk to me. I got something for you. So, in fact, I'm going to turn my back for just a second here. I'll see if I can find it. Let's see. Maybe not. But anyway, it's back there somewhere. The music monitor is what he handed me. It was at a station in Cleveland. And he said, do you think something like this would work? So I'm going through it, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Casey and the Sunshine Band, Michael Jackson, Billie Jean, Romantics, What I Like About You. I'm like, this is like Friday night 80s on WNCI. And he said, exactly. Do you think if we made it a format, would it work? And I said, well, there's nothing like that in town here. I suppose it could. And he said, well, would you like to program it? Okay. Yeah. So on May 31st, 1998, WXST Star 107.9 signed on in Columbus, Ohio, America's first all 80s radio station. Well, it wasn't exactly all 80s. It was like 1975 or 76 to 1992. Today they call it classic hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the same stack of music that we were playing in Columbus.
Wow.
And from there, I went to Champaign, Illinois, and programmed an oldies station, oldies 92.5 WKIO for Saga Communications, still a big company today. And then in 2004, came back and got the job at WHIO, and been there ever since. Wow. They keep trying to kick me out, but for some reason, they just don't, you know.
Well, you're a legend. What can you say, Kevin? You know, you can't kick out a legend. So you're still doing radio then.
I'm kidding about that. But they're all wonderful people to work with.
Yeah, they are. They are. I was familiar with a few of like the sales manager and things at WHIO when mm-hmm. I was married to Paul Sherry. He had a lot of commercials with Channel 7 WHIO, right. And I got to take a lot of trips from them, yeah. Which I'm very blessed to have had.
Let me stand up for a minute. I'll show you something here.
Okay.
Let me get over here. I can reach it. Okay. This is what they called an ET, an electronic transcription disc. And it's 16 inches big. It says right here, WHIO TV news presentation. I'm not sure, but this might be their first, the audio of their first or one of their first newscasts.
Wow.
And wow. I have no way to play this. Thing.
Oh, I bet not.
So, I mean, if anybody knows how to play one of these things, I'd like to get the audio digitized. But yeah. We have a whole bunch of those in a trophy case. One of them is one of Franklin Roosevelt's fireside chats.
Oh, wow.
And I also have another box of them here somewhere.
Yeah, I saw you have quite a collection of CDs.
I will show you this. I mean, turn around. You think I have too many CDs?
Nobody can have too many CDs. Come on.
there's at least three or four radio formats in that.
Wow.
In that cabinet right there.
Wow. You know, I know something else about you that we have in common. You're also an author. you are a radio junkie.
Yeah, you turn up in writing. Of a radio junkie, which is me. That's basically, I wrote the book because I wanted people to understand that, you know, there's so much discussion today about, you know, the news business, news bias, fake news. But I wanted people to know that if you're doing it right, it truly is an honorable business. If you're being fair, if you're being honest, and I'm not saying I'm not going to make the contention that every single journalist in America carries a bias. Every journalist in America has their own opinions, and that's okay. But I, you know, not everybody allows that to carry in, to have it infect their writing. And I don't, I'm not saying everybody does it, but too many will. And we're already seeing lately the FCC preparing to take some actions about it. You can't, if you're 90 days out from an election, equal time laws take effect. And you have to differentiate the difference between equal time laws and what President Reagan got rid of in 1987, the so-called fairness doctrine. But there are still equal time laws. And if you're not following them, you're going to get nailed. And that is exactly what happened in the 2024 presidential election. Why, you know, there was... the gentleman, Lauren Michaels, watching Saturday Night Live and suddenly sees a presidential candidate on the show and is calling up going, wait a minute. We're a week out from the election. Equal time laws. You can't give her airtime and not give the Republican candidate airtime, which was why if you watch the NASCAR race on NBC the next day, you saw all these ads for President Trump. They had to air them. And by the way, they didn't have to pay for them either.
Well, there you go.
They didn't pay for it either. They were freebies. They had to do it. And there are too many people are forgetting that. If you want to be fair, now I'm not, does everything apply? I'm not saying it does. You know, Stephen Colbert outside of an election can say what he wants to say on his show. But 90 days out from an election, if you're going to feature one candidate or constantly beat up on one candidate, the FCC is going to start asking questions.
And they come down hard on you too, don't they?
They can. I mean, a violation of equal time laws gets you fined. Now, you know, I have no dog in the fight. And, you know, Colbert can be a funny guy. But I also, you know, I look at a lot of different shows. You know, I'm kind of, sort of friends with Bill O'Reilly. You know, not long ago, he dedicated his newest book to me saying, you know, Kevin, keep writing your very own no spin news. But he's a very successful now YouTube broadcaster. He does a 15-minute broadcast, news broadcast every night on YouTube. And he's seen by millions of people. So even though he's not doing network stuff anymore, it only shows how streaming is so popular and how it's becoming so popular. You can actually go over the heads of the networks, and a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah, a lot more freedom of speech too, what you can publish and
that
what
is true.
You can get away
I mean
with.
We're guaranteed free speech in this country, and we should never lose it either.
That's right. That's right. Well, I don't think you're ever going to lose your speech, your speaking abilities. You also, I think, have a, and let, correct me if I'm wrong, don't you have a real interesting hobby? Do you love aviation?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, well, if I had my wallet here, I'd pull it out. I have the, I'm a student pilot, and I do, well, I at least have all my rules, all the flight rules.
Hey, there you go. Oh, my gosh, that's the rules?
Yeah, memorize this and learn how to fly, and you can be a pilot.
There you go.
But, yeah, I flew my longest solo flight. I flew 273 miles round trip. I went from here to Bolton Field in Columbus by myself. From Bolton Field, which is a controlled airport, down to Pike County, which is this little dinky, you know, 1,500 foot strip that if you're not really looking closely, you'll miss it, because I almost did. And then take off from there and flew all the way back to Moraine Air Park, and quite an experience. It was a whole Saturday afternoon, but my flight bag is right over in the other corner of this room right here, and I've got both my electronic and what they call the whiz wheel, which is an E6B computer. It's like a slide rule that enables you to be able to figure out time, distance, fuel consumption. If you're flying somewhere and you need to figure out how to get gas, you know, when you need to get gas.
Yeah.
Tells you how to do that and how to make, you know, how to figure waypoints on your flight. So, you know, you take a stopwatch with you, that way, you know, while you're flying, you can know about when you should see the airport. And, it was quite the experience for me too, because to realize you actually can get in a plane. Well, funny thing is my nephew, who, is my housemate, we took him on my first, they call them discovery flights.
Mm-hmm.
And, when the flight instructor told me to get in the left-hand seat, my nephew's looking at me like, "You're going to fly this thing?"
Oh, no.
Oh yeah, watch this, you know. So, but, you know, he thinks I'm a menace on the highway, but, but says, "Oh, you actually can fly the thing." So,
it's a most amazing feeling, isn't it? To be up there in the middle of that, just nothing. Just God and
very liberating. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just started doing that at this age. Did you, were you interested in flying as a child or younger?
Well, I took a little bit of flight training in the 1990s, but obviously one of the high points, you know, of any baby boomer, really, if you want to look at it this way, was, the Apollo flights in the 60s. And in 1979, I had the opportunity to shake the hand of Neil Armstrong. Wow. And interview him on the radio. For those of you kids that are watching,
yeah,
Neil Armstrong was the first guy to walk on the moon.
That's right.
And very nice person. I mean, you know, He was a very humble man, but he had a big smile. He, I asked him, Neil, when you were on the moon, you said that it was very pretty. What did you mean by that? And he, you know, he wasn't well known for talking about being on the moon, but he did take the time to describe a couple of things that he saw there, that his untimely death was, you know, somewhat, well, I know the family filed a malpractice suit, but ultimately he was buried by his wishes, buried at sea, being Navy guy that he was, naval aviator. You know, he's a historical figure, and I will be watching with great interest when the Artemis flight takes off. Hopefully, this podcast will be seen before they launch. They're set to launch around mid-March, and they're going to be doing something similar to what the Apollo 8 crew of Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and Bill Anders did. And hey, if you remember that evening on Christmas Eve in 1968, when Frank Borman came on the radio and said, "For all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth," you know, and recited the first chapters of Genesis.
Wow.
We were watching this unworldly sight, listening to these guys going around the moon, quoting scripture. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you on the good earth.
Wow. Beautiful. Beautiful, huh? And look how far we've come.
Right. Right.
Amazing. Yeah.
So it's, you know, I've had quite a life, and, you know, we never know how much longer we have, but I intend to have fun and go kicking and screaming into that good night. Matter of fact, you might notice, let's see if I can get my hand pointed in the right direction. That thing, the drum head.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has a very familiar logo. It should. If you remember the 1960s and the TV series, The Monkees.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That drum head is signed by Mickey Dolenz.
Wow. Who,
of course, if you remember, he was the guy playing the drums.
Of course.
And he is going to be at the Phrase in July.
Ooh.
And yeah, I'll be buying a ticket.
Oh, yeah, I will be too. I definitely will be too.
Because I've been to his shows before, and he's fun. Wait a minute, I'm being invaded again. Come here. Come here, JJ. Let's see.
You want to show JJ for a moment?
Yeah, there's JJ.
There we go.
Yeah.
Hi, JJ. Kevin, you're amazing. You're a
I have, like I, have I have another one in here too, Starburst, who is the newest addition, but this is my pal. I have coffee in the morning and he sits and watches me drink coffee.
Yeah, I have Tia. She is my 7-year-old little feline girl, and she has to have her morning snuggles with mommy.
There you go.
When I have my coffee.
They all sleep with me.
Yeah, mine does too.
At one point or another.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they own us, you know?
Yes. Well, they say, you know, cats don't have owners. Cats have staff.
That's right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm Tia's servant.
Absolutely.
Well, Kevin, I am running out of battery and definitely not running out of enjoying speaking with you tonight, and I appreciate you so much. And would you give us the blessing of coming on again sometime and sharing some more stories and some more history? Laura. And if I want to, sorry, go ahead.
I said count on it.
Yeah. Well, you've helped me tremendously tonight. You've been very patient and very sweet. And people may not recognize your face, but now they'll know who you are.
Told you could do it.
Yeah, well, Thank you. You know, having faith in me, it's all a learning curve. And you know, I said I graduated from the International College of Broadcasting, but it's because the graceful Tommy Collins, yes, who's the best teacher in the world,
who is now working for Connoisseur Broadcasting.
Oh, he is. I think his son, Ian, is working for WHIO, isn't
and
he?
And his son, Ian, yeah, works with us.
Oh, what a delight he is. What a delight they are. Yeah, Tommy is amazing. He believed in me and helped me and encouraged me and overlooked a lot of my flaws and even gave me the Perseverance Award.
And look at you now. Look at you now. Here, you know, you're doing a podcast. You're doing TV stuff. And you know, it just takes, well, what did I used to say in the classroom? If you can dream it, you can do it.
That's right. That's right. Well, I knew it when I was 8 years old. I was going to grow up to do this.
There you go.
Yeah. So God has blessed me with it. And hopefully I'm going to bring a lot of interesting, wonderful people like you to light and spread a lot of positivity and joy and laughter and a whole lot of love.
Well, do me a favor. Go get them.
Oh, I'm just getting started, Kevin. Just getting started. So I want to thank you again for joining us on Let's Talk About It with who? Dora Sherry.
There you go.
And tonight with Kevin Fodor, a.k.a. the legendary Jason Michaels. You're wonderful. And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.